doing it. There is zero accountability. Who are they accountable to? The CEO? To the Defense Department?
They're not accountable to anybody.
Exactly. And that's the show that I'm going to do tomorrow with R.J. Hillhouse, the author of Outsource. I hope you listen in then tomorrow, Malin. I really hope you do. It should be a terrific show. But for now, I got to go. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean strengthened again into a Category 2 storm in the southern Gulf of Mexico and made landfall in Veracruz. Reaching 100 miles per hour today, property damage from the once Category 5 storm has been extensive and 13 fatalities have been reported in the Caribbean. Dean has since been downgraded to a Category 1 hurricane. After President Bush expressed some frustration with the inability of Iraq's government, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki struck back. Maliki said no one has the right to impose timetables on his government and that his country, quote, can find friends elsewhere. Realizing how his criticism was interpreted, President Bush reiterated his support for al-Maliki today at a speech before military veterans. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed today when their helicopter experienced mechanical problems and crashed. The UH-60 Black Hawk was on a night operation with another helicopter when it went down outside of Kirkuk. A state of emergency has been declared in several Ohio towns affected by flooding. 500 have been forced to evacuate their homes, and 22 people have been killed since the formation of Tropical Storm Erin. Property damage has now reached $38 million. A newly declassified internal report by the CIA says the agency's top leaders missed key opportunities to thwart two hijackers before 9/11. The report also found the CIA failed to formulate a plan to combat al-Qaeda in the years before the attack. The Pentagon announced it will shut down a program which collects information about civilian activity around U.S. military bases. Critics say the surveillance program targets anti-war protesters. The recommendation to end the program came from Chief of Intelligence for the Defense Department. In Washington, Justice Department attorneys say missing White House emails are private and not subject to public disclosure. Attorneys are fighting a lawsuit aimed at forcing the administration to reveal the whereabouts of some 5 million emails the White House says have been misplaced. And scientists have identified one of the factors contributing to the collapse of the Minneapolis I-35 bridge. The buildup of guano-containing pigeon waste acted as a catalyst that caused the support structure to rust more quickly. This week, the 13th and final body was recovered from the wreckage. And according to a Gallup poll, only 18% of Americans believe Congress is doing a good job. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40. Because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
The Food and Drug Administration has approved a popular adult schizophrenia drug for use in children. Risperdal, manufactured by Janssen LP, is now being prescribed to people as young as 13 to treat irritability arising from autism. Lehman Brothers has closed its subprime mortgage unit, BNC Mortgage. BNC's closure will affect 1,200 employees and cost the company more than $50 million. So far, 24,000 mortgage company employees have lost their jobs, and more than 20 of the country's top lenders remain in business. The Financial Times reports Apple has announced the carriers for the European vision of its popular iPhone. T-Mobile, O2, and Orange are the chosen service providers who will pay 10% of revenues from the iPhone usage to Apple. The U.S. Product Safety Commission has issued a recall on more than 300,000 Chinese-made children's products. 250,000 of the recalled goods are SpongeBob SquarePants school supplies that contain paint with excessive lead. Google says its YouTube internet site will now feature video advertising. Google bought the video sharing site last year for $1.65 billion. Light Sweet crude is trading at $69.26 a barrel, down due to Hurricane Dean. Gold is trading at $668.70 an ounce. The Dow closed up 145 points, NASDAQ up 31, S&P 500 up almost 17. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Reed Kavner.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, 6.5 minutes past the hour. And it's that very special time of week. You know, the middle of the week. You know what Wednesdays are in these parts. You know exactly what it means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight, it's prayer meeting. Long about now, down in the basement of the Baptist church where I was raised, they're doling out fried chicken or maybe roast beef and mashed potatoes, and there'll be a dessert tray with a dessert table with yellow cake with that wonderful buttery cinnamon crispy crunchy topping swirly stuff going through it, and homemade pies and so forth and so on. Maybe a little banana pudding. You and me, us, we will, however, spend our prayer meeting edition pointing out the manifest evils of what the right-wing religion industry does after that dinner and before that dinner and upstairs where in the sanctuary where all the hypocrisy goes down. And God knows I've got a load of it this evening. I always do. But the fact of the matter is, we're not going to start with religion this evening. Unless, of course, you know, George Bush is just an extension of the ignorance and superstition and foolishness of the religion industry. No, we are. We're going to start with George Bush. We're going to start with his remarks to the VFW today in Kansas City, Missouri. Lovely town, Kansas City, made a little less so by the presence of that pig-eyed, jug-eared, little hateful lout. Now he went running off to a captive audience at the VFW today to talk about the Iraq War and it's not the Iraq War, it's the Iraqi occupation now. See, I keep trying to get that out of my system. It's the Iraq occupation now, and where he sees that in the grand scope of history. We have some sound from George W. Bush's appearance there before the VFW. It was I hope you haven't had fried chicken or roast beef and mashed potatoes or anything yummy like that before we go to this soundbite, because it's pretty disgusting in the long run. But I could sit here. I've got the transcript of the speech in front of me, but frankly, I would far prefer that you hear it out of the lout's mouth himself. So here we go.
So I'm going to limit myself to one argument that has particular significance today.
Then, as now, people argued the real problem was America's presence, and that if we would just withdraw, the killing would end. The argument that America's presence in Indochina was dangerous had a long pedigree. In 1955, long before the United States had entered the war, Graham Greene wrote a novel called The Quiet American. It was set in Saigon, and the main character was a young government agent named Alden Pyle. He was a symbol of American purpose and patriotism and dangerous naivete. Another character describes Alden this way: "I never knew a man who had better motives for all the trouble he caused." After America entered the Vietnam War, the Graham Greene argument gathered some steam. As a matter of fact, many argued that if we pulled out, there would be no consequences for the Vietnamese people. 1972, one anti-war senator put it this way: "What earthly difference does it make to nomadic tribes or uneducated subsistence farmers in Vietnam or Cambodia or Laos whether they have a military dictator, a royal prince, or a socialist commissar in some distant capital that they've never seen and may never heard of?" A columnist for the New York Times wrote a similar vein in 1975, just as Cambodia and Vietnam were falling to the communists. "It's difficult to imagine," he said, "how their lives could be anything but better with the Americans gone." Headline of that story, dated Nam Phinh, summed up the argument: "Indochina without Americans, for most a better life." The world would learn just how costly these misimpressions would be.
Huh?
In Cambodia, the Khmer Rouge began a murderous rule in which hundreds of thousands of Cambodians died by starvation and torture and execution. In Vietnam, former allies of the United States and government workers and intellectuals and businessmen were sent off to prison camps where tens of thousands perished. Hundreds of thousands more fled the country on rickety boats, many of them going to their graves in the South China Sea. 3 decades later, there is a legitimate debate about how we got into the Vietnam War and how we left. There's no debate in my mind that the veterans from Vietnam deserve the high praise of the United States of America.
I may have to just, like, kill the mic and just start sniffing glue or something. This is insane.
Whatever your position is on that debate, one unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is that the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people, re-education camps, and killing fields.
Well, now, let's take a quick review of that, shall we? No, we may have to go back to it, Agnes. He starts out in an attempt to create a historical perspective by referencing a work of, come on, everybody, fiction. Graham Greene's book is not history. It was fiction, and it's 1955. And it was quite popular, and it was arguably a valid argument in 1955. Now, on the other hand, using that work of fiction to explain the carnage of a war that cost us 55,000 dead on the battlefield and climbing today is, to say the least, intellectually dishonest. It's not the question of people died because we left, and this is critical with regard to analyzing Iraq. It is not a matter that people, Vietnamese people, whether they be boat people or the victims of the Khmer Rouge, or victims of the re-education camps. It is not a question that they died because we left. It is a question of they died because we went. Boat people, re-educated people were largely collaborators. They were viewed with the same disdain as the collaborator Vichy French were. And we're seeing the same thing in Iraq today. People who are deemed to be collaborators with the Americans do so at the peril of their lives. Because we are an occupying force. And therein is the word that is should really be the subject of the analysis. What happens in an illegal, unjust, immoral occupation? Moreover, this little bit from this speech today tells you where what passes, the settlings in his skull that pass for a brain, are going. He's trying to figure a way out of something that he got into without ever thinking about having to get out. Because remember, we were going to be greeted as liberators. Everybody was just going to love us, and it was all going to be sunshine and falafel in Baghdad. But it wasn't, of course. It wasn't at all. So instead, he has to talk about the Khmer Rouge, the Cambodian regime, Pol Pot. Let's see. Cambodia. Is that a province of Vietnam? No, it's not. However, we did start trouble in Cambodia by illegally bombing it. Same thing for, how do they pronounce it? Loas? Loose? Laos. Laos. We did engage in dirty business in Laos. But all of that doesn't matter to George. It's all just ex post facto hindsight's 2020 prattle for him. And now he says we can't leave Iraq because there'd be a bloodbath. You know what? There wasn't a bloodbath 2 months after we went in. And it didn't take so-called Al-Qaeda 2 months to gear up. The guy that we supposedly eventually killed, the one-legged guy that there was a picture of him walking around and couldn't figure out how to shoot a machine gun, that guy was, his head was offered to us before the war, but the Bush administration declined to take him out because they said if they did, it would harm the justification for going in. You see, George W. Bush doesn't give a fig about the Iraqi people. He doesn't care about the 750,000 Iraqi civilians that are already dead. He doesn't give a fig about the 4,000 American soldiers who are already dead. He doesn't give a fig about the 20,000-30,000 plus American soldiers who are maimed and wounded. Some of whom may come home looking completely physically fine, but be mentally shattered. He doesn't give a damn about them. They are toys. Everything in George Bush's world, from the days when he was sticking M-80s up the rectums of frogs and lighting them to watch them blow up as a child, has been a toy. Life is a joke to George W. Bush. And I despise him for it. I had a call from a right-winger here, I guess it was Friday night, well after the shows were over. He wanted to tell me that George Bush is your president too, sir. No, he's not. I didn't vote for him. And I won't support him. He's poison. Because, you see, I do understand morality. I don't need some ignorant preacher standing in a pulpit telling me that morality has something to do with 5,000-year-old aphorisms for conduct of people who were fascinated by wheelbarrows. I understand morality without that. And if I and George Bush is an immoral man. And if I would keep my hands at least marginally clean of that immorality, I cannot support him. I cannot back him. I cannot in any wise sanction his actions. Because he is a monster. Not a little bit, but a lot. Yeah, Pol Pot killed a lot of his own people. But there are something approaching 750,000 dead Iraqi civilians who might be alive today, give or take a little bit of actuarial mortality, had it not been for the fact that somewhere around February of 2003, George Bush stood with that ignorant, ape-like smirk on his face and said, "He tried to kill my daddy." And despite the best advice of the entire world, attacked a nation that was no threat to us. Excuse me. Now, in the transcript, and I don't know how much of this I can take before the vomiting sets in, but in the transcript of these remarks, and God knows what it actually sounded like, but about three paragraphs in, it took him three paragraphs before he said, "I stand before you as a wartime president. I wish I didn't have to say that, but an enemy that attacked us on," come on, everybody say it, "September the 11th, 2001, declared war on the United States of America. And war is what we're engaged in. The struggle has been called a clash of civilizations. In truth, it's a struggle for civilization. We fight for a free way of life against a new barbarianism." Eat me raw, George W. Bush. We fight for a free way of life? Hey, George, asshole. You took our freedom in our homes, our right to be secure in our persons, papers, property, and effects. I'm sorry, Agnes. I've gotten to the point where I can't call him anything but that. You know what I mean? We are spied on. U-2 spy planes that were used to spy on the Soviet Union now fly over the United States spying on you. Spy satellites that used to be used to pinpoint, Soviet missile installations in Cuba now look down on you. Telephone algorithms on great big Uniblab 10,000 computers in the basement of the NSA in hardened bunkers that used to be used to spy, for Cold War wiretapping are now used to listen to you when your little grandbaby calls and says, "I love you, Grammy." The most sensitive, the most intimate moments of American life are now violated by a man who has the unmitigated gall to stand before the veterans of foreign wars and say, "We fight for a free way of life against a new barbarism, an ideology whose followers have killed thousands on American soil and seek to kill again on an even greater scale." God damn you, George W. Bush. I put those a space between those two words because that is what did they call it the other night, the guy, the preacher in law, that is an imprecatory prayer on my part. Pray it with me, brethren and sistren, here on Prayer Meeting Wednesday on Head On. God damn you, George W. Bush. Heh! An ideology whose followers have killed thousands on American soil and seek to kill again on an even greater scale. George, you damnable liar. No Iraqi was plotting against the American people or against your sacred Walmarts or your beloved Home Depots or anything else before you invaded that pitiful, pitiful, pathetic, already racked, wrecked, and ruined country. An ideology whose followers have killed thousands on American soil. George, you damnable liar, no Iraqi lifted a finger in 9/11. You monster. You defamer of the dead of the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. You destroyer. You prevaricator. You mendacious thing upon the planet. You cancer upon the body politic of the American people. No Iraqi had anything to do with 9/11. But you're still out there, flogging it away, waving the bloody shirt, hollering 9/11 every time someone criticizes your stinking, hateful, genocidal war in Iraq. There are not vile enough words to be used on you, George W. Bush. And on that day when finally, as a result of natural causes, you shuffle off this mortal coil and go to be roasted in hell, if hell exists, George Bush, I will dance. I will dance. Let's go to the phone. Susan's calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Agnes. Get away from the dump button.
Not on it.
You scum sucking, motherfucking, pusillanimous, cowardly, motherfucking son of a bitch. You have the gall to walk into a room full of men who have put their lives on the line by going and fighting overseas when you couldn't even be bothered to stay in a champagne unit?
Yeah, there's that, too.
You go back to screwing your goats. That's all you're worth.
You catching this, Agent Fred?
Oh, Agent Fred, fuck off. Pardon my language, Angus Bob. Oh! That wasn't even the reason I called in.
Mm-hmm.
And blaming liberals for Pol Pot. I mean, that just takes cake. I mean,
Pol Pot and Cambodia are not Iraq.
Yes. Pol Pot in Cambodia would have happened. I don't care what happened in Vietnam. The only difference being a whole lot of guys, 55,000 plus guys would still be alive, not to mention all the guys that are walking around with this dead look in their eyes. They're physically alive. They got this really, really awful look in their eyes.
Yep.
And he never goes away.
He dishonored them all.
And I'm just...
Oh, wait, but I've got something here from the transcript you're going to love. You're going to especially be fond of. For those of you who wear the uniform, nothing makes me more proud than to say I am your commander-in-chief. Thank you for volunteering in the service of the United States of America.
Those men in Iraq are not no longer volunteers. They've been stopped, lost, and held over so many times. They're no longer volunteers. They've been drafted.
Yep.
That's why they're committing suicide at a record rate.
Indeed.
is dying like flies. So he can strut around and say he's a war president. He can strut around and prove that he's got... He can strut around and prove that his weenie is bigger than anybody else's.
I don't know, you know, and I don't guess any of us know for certain, Susan, what it is that makes him do the evil that he does. If you sat a group of us progressives down in a room, some of us would say that he's done this evil for the sake of Halliburton. Others would say that there are Oedipal dynamics going on from his family life that cause him to behave in this fashion.
I think he's your basic serial killer with a whole lot of power, and he gets off on the blood.
It could well be. It could well be.
But that's not the reason why I called, Bob.
Okay.
I called for another reason. And way, it's kind of fitting I called on prayer meeting.
Yeah?
I called to give you hell.
What for?
Bob, you've been naughty.
What have I done?
Well, you did it last yesterday. I couldn't stay on. I had to go pick up a lawnmower, so I couldn't stay on the phone long enough to talk to you.
Okay.
You have a nasty little blind spot.
What's that?
It's about Mormons.
A blind spot about Mormons?
Yeah.
How so?
You were talking about the American family and their guy and his wife.
Yeah.
And the kids and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, only in the case of the Mormon, it's a guy and his wife and his wife and his wife and his wife and his wife.
Okay.
And you do that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's playing to a stereotype. Now, I'm not a Mormon. I don't like the Mormon religion, and I know a lot about it because my grandfather was a Mormon elder.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing to a stereotype, and it's not nice. You shouldn't be doing that, Bob.
I don't know how to put this. I don't owe the Mormon the Mormon hierarchy or the Mormon philosophy any more regard than I owe any other bizarre religious cult.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, the multiple wives things was out a long time ago. The only
really?
People that do the multiple wives things are illegal.
And they say that they're the real Mormons, Susan.
Well,
that the ones who don't have multiple wives are the heretics.
I can't help how they feel. I'm not defending Mormonism.
I mean, Mitt Romney's grandfather had multiple wives.
Hey, I've got ancestors. One of my ancestors had multiple wives.
Uh-huh. So that's off limits for me to comment on? Is that what you're saying?
No, this was back before statehood when it was still legal. When they became a state, they got rid of the multiple wives. Okay, everything's cool.
And now, in the present, they sort of do a nudge and a wink at the polygamists.
Okay, and those people should be condemned. Go after them, fine. But don't, you know, all I'm saying is, you know, make a distinction between the, your everyday Mormon, of which there are many, and these kooks who are marrying 10-year-old girls. And they're not just Mormons or child molesters.
Now, Susan, to be fair, okay, I'll grant you that. And they run around.
Go after those people.
And they kidnap little girls. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I'll help.
But by the same token, you say that those are the kooks. Now, the mainstream Mormons believe that they have sacred underwear. What's less kooky about that?
Well, what's less kooky than...
what's less kooky than that? I mean, you know, right, believing that you eat a cracker and it turns into Jesus meat? That's insane, too.
But it's...
You know, all these brands of insanity
I'm not saying it's not... You know, that's part of their belief system, fine, whatever. But you keep going back on the Mormons, specifically the Mormons.
Well, we've got one. We've got one running for president, and I think that we need to drive home the fact that this man is religious. He's religiously insane, and that's part of the insanity. The nudge and a wink, Susan. The nudge and a wink on polygamy is part of the insanity. There's polygamy all over Utah. Okay, and they're not going and rounding them up.
Help you go after it.
They're not going and rounding them up. So as long as you're condoning it. You know, whether it's with a nudge and a wink or open sanction, it is still condoned.
I know, and it will have to go after that. But as a rule, the majority of Mormons condemn that. So fine.
Let me ask you. I'm calling. Susan, I'm calling on you for speculation, and I understand that. So we understand that going in. But do you think that if the Mormons knew that they could get away with it, that they wouldn't revert to polygamy like that?
I honestly have no idea. I really don't. I'm not a Mormon.
I mean, what was it? It was only in 1970-some that the noble, exalted 32nd noble Turk of the Mormon faith finally declared that African Americans were actually human?
Something like that.
So I don't see any particular need for me to lay off. Do you? I mean, this is weird.
You can lay off Mormonism. I'm just asking you to lay off that one part of it because it's playing to a stereotype. It's like saying black people are shiftless, but they do have good rhythm.
Well, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one because I don't see it, I don't see the distinction between them, or I don't see the comparison between the two at all. One has to do, for instance, with what some would call the accident of one's birth, i.e., one's skin color.
If you're born Mormon, what can you do? You know.
Well, there's lots of people that have been born Mormon that have freed themselves from it.
Yeah, but what about people who have not had a chance to do so yet? Are you going to slam those people because of something that they have been educated into from the grave because they don't know any better? They may be one of the best people I ever knew, one of the most moral people I ever knew, was a Mormon. He would go out if you visited his home and you drank coffee. He would go out and buy coffee and bring it home and make it for you. But he wouldn't drink it. Same with anything. He wouldn't partake of it. But he would get it for you, provided, of course, it was legal. He didn't shove it down your throat. He very quietly lived his life.
Nor do I think that they should not be free to do so.
Is that type of person going to be made to feel less at home on the horn because you're playing to a stereotype?
Do you honestly think, Susan, that there is a liberal Mormon population out there that has any remote interest in the horn?
Bob, who do you think taught me to be a liberal? It was that Mormon. He was my first cousin.
Okay.
I wish to God he was still alive, because he was the man who taught me to be a liberal. He taught me to see the good in everybody.
Okay.
And he did it by example.
All right. I don't think, Susan, that I guess it's the polygamy issue itself that you take issue with.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm trying to understand here. I'm free to hammer him.
Don't go after the polygamy. You know, it's illegal. Go after it. I'll help. But don't.
I mean, personally, my views on polygamy.
A polygamist.
You know what my views are on polygamy? I'm a real liberal. I believe that people should be able to love as they see fit. And whether it's a polygamous marriage or a line marriage or however you want to describe it, if a group of consenting adults want to and there's no puppies or children involved, it ain't none of my business. Okay.
Exactly. But wait.
You know,
no
because
children.
the argument that you're making about my comments on polygamy could just as easily be made about my comments on Baptist ministers who get caught in skirts pee-peeing in front of little children while whacked out of their minds on booze and pills.
Exactly.
That somehow or another I'm gooning on them for their sexuality. No, it's not about the sexuality. It's about the
children.
Hypocrisy.
Hypocrisy and children. If it's involving them, help, I'll help you go after them. But going after somebody who is not a polygamist, but who comes from a polygamist history, no.
Do you know how many, especially in Utah and Arizona, do you know how many there are who are mainstream in the church Mormons who practice polygamy on the sly? That number
well,
is...
If they're not hurting anybody and there's no children involved, who gives a rip?
I don't. But you know what? As long as they're out there saying that they're more moral than me because of their underwear or because they won't sit down and, you know, drink a cup of coffee, then I've got open season on them. Do I not?
Well, that may be. I just have a real problem with the polygamous thing, because you seem to be really, really hitting on that. Not, you know, if you run across a polygamist in the United States, go for him. It's illegal. And he's probably got kids, wives, if he's in Utah. Go for him. I'll help.
Okay.
Especially if he's got kids for wives, I'll help. I really will.
Well, there are a lot.
I like the Mormon religion. I find that I've looked into it a lot, and I find it offends me profoundly.
Yeah, the idea of taking the genetic heritage of the Jews away from them and declaring that Native Americans are secret Jews.
Yeah. Oh, hey, there's another.
You know that that minimizes so much. That minimizes the Holocaust.
Oh, hey, it gets worse. In the Mormon Church has a little, in fact, they got sued over it. What they were doing was they were baptizing Holocaust victims as Mormons. And then turning around and notifying their surviving relatives, which really didn't go down well.
No. So.
Which I thought was downright scuzzy.
You know, I think we'll just have to agree to disagree on this one, Susan, because.
There are things about the Mormon religion that I find profoundly disturbing. That's one of them. But, you know, some things, you know, I think that, you know, just.
But again, please understand, when I make reference to this, it's not about the practice, it's about the hypocrisy.
Okay, in that case, yeah, go for it.
You know, I still love you, as I do you. But I want to be clear and I want to be understood on this. Mainstream Mormonism only decries polygamy with a nudge and a wink. Okay, there are virtually you can't get a district attorney or a prosecutor in Utah to engage in a whole scale search out and hunt down of polygamists. Not because of the laws, but because he will be frowned upon or perhaps even shunned by the mainline Mormon body.
Yeah. If I had my druthers, and I know this will never happen, but if I had my druthers, I would see a U.S. attorney put into place in Salt Lake who was not a Mormon, and then say, okay, you get those polygamists and you nail their asses.
But you see, that's one of the other offensive things, Susan, is that the Constitution clearly states that you cannot be subjected to a religious test to hold office in the United States of America. U.S. attorneys are subject to Senate confirmation, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you will not find. I don't know if there's ever been a non-Mormon U.S. attorney in Utah. It's like a little religious cult center that's inside the rest of the United States.
Yeah. Perhaps what they ought to do is start take all of the U.S. attorneys, put their names in a hat, and say, "Okay, pull out such and such a name, and say, okay, you're going to this district, and assign them willy-nilly."
Yeah, sort of like circuit riders. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and that way they have. There's no way of saying, "Hey, this was planned in advance," because it's pure chance, and that way. There's no favoritism either.
I understand that. That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah. Of course, it'll never happen.
Yeah, you know, never say never. All right, well, I appreciate it, Susan. You know, I take your criticism constructively, and you know, maybe I oughta lay off, but I got a sense that I probably won't, because as long as they're out there being holier than me, I'm gonna take a shot.
Hey, nail, you know, if you want to nail Mitt Romney, you go right ahead. He's fair game. As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and he's doing stuff outside of how many wives he has or hasn't.
Yeah.
I understand it. Susan, thank you so much, dear.
I love you. I love Agnes.
We love you, too.
Kids.
You take care now.
Bye.
Bye. And Carla calling from Utah. Hey, Carla, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Okay, great. Couple of things. I heard on Democracy Now a couple of days ago, and also I think I heard about it maybe a month and a half ago, but I forgot about it. There are two teenagers, 18 and either 18 and 19 or 17 and 18, that have started out from San Francisco, California on May 21st, and they're walking across the United States, and their thing is called March for Peace.
Oh, wow.
And they have picked up, you know, I talked to them just a little while ago, and they have picked up 7 or 8 other people. And on their webpage, marchforpeace.info, they have an itinerary and showing the map and the progress that they're making. And their goal is to get to Washington, D.C., by September 15th, I believe, and be there in time to connect up with another rally that they're having. The Answer, you know, group is having one sort of tying in when General Petraeus releases his report that has been written by the White House.
Uh-huh.
And be there for about a week. They are in Ohio now, and they'll be marching in a number of cities in West Virginia.
Oh.
And then they'll go into Virginia and come up, I forgot some of the cities in Virginia, but come into Arlington, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to put the word out, and this is their telephone number. If anybody on your airways wants to call them and give them some support, it's area code 845-264-3912.
Say it again, please. 845.
Uh-huh. 264-3912.
This is an amazing act on their part. I hope that it will inspire others of a similar age, frankly. Because that's,
Definitely.
When you've got the George Bush's war czar out there, what was it, a week ago, saying that a draft shouldn't be out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
People this age should pay attention to statements like that.
Right. And there's a group in Nebraska that has, it's called Nebraskans for Peace, and they march through there like Ashland, and they stayed over, a lady had them stay over at their house, and then the next day they had a big barbecue and cookout for them. And what ticks me off about some of these, it begins with an A and ends with a hole.
Yeah.
That it says, you know, go for this cause. I don't believe in your cause, but you can go for it, and then when the troops come home, you'll end up spitting on them. And I thought, how ignorant. How could you not, you know, march for peace and want peace? We've got a president that believes in war, and if somebody ever could do a research project on how many times he hasn't mentioned the word peace, and, you know, as a reservist and coming from a military, you know, family, you know, my grandfather served in, you know, the World War II and World War One, uncles in World War II and the Korean War. And,
a lot
and,
like my family, yeah.
Yeah, and then for him to stand in his friggin' uniform, pardon me, on the, you know, on the Lincoln, and when we said we, you know, mission is accomplished, and he has his little parachute thing hauled up to his Wawa.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's on, and then he, and then, I've heard a little bit about the speech, you know, with the veterans of foreign war, which I you could not stomach. I mute him out. But for him to say, well, we've got to defeat the enemy over there before they come here. Well, when he was in the National Guard, that was one of the reasons he wanted to stay in Texas, because they believed that they were going to come and attack us here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that, and it's all a bunch of scare tactics, you know, and then on, I got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, so I may be rambling. But, on the Mormon issue, you know, Mitt Romney, he said on Fox 13, you know, Chris Wallace asked him, well, what about this issue with the dog, you know, tied
right
up on your car? And I thought it was very funny. Well, he says, well, the dog always wanted to get in his kennel, and we put the kennel up on top of the car, and it was airtight, and he just loved it. Now, I may be wrong, but if you're airtight, you're not getting any air, so how did the dog breathe?
Well, exactly that. And the thing is, they, you know, the dog was probably cage or kennel trained, so that if the kennel was sitting on the ground, he'd get in the kennel. If it was sitting on the porch, he'd get in the kennel. If it was sitting in the back of the truck, he'd get in the kennel. On top of the car, he'd get in the kennel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's such a weaselly little evasion of the issue. Now, in that same interview, Carla, he also went on to say, well, I didn't know it was illegal to do that at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm tired of these Republicans, Carla, who use excuses that would never be tolerated from working class America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of the oldest sayings in American jurisprudence that ignorance of the law is no excuse. In other words, if you are going down the road with a dog doing what that poor terrified dog did, and you got pulled over, you would not be heard to say, I'm sorry, officer, I didn't know it was illegal. He'd say, well, now you know it's illegal, and it was illegal when you did it, and I'm still going to give you a ticket, and you've still violated the law.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, in the world of irresponsible, amoral Republicans, apparently that excuse works.
Mm-hmm.
And it beats the stuffing out of me. You know, George, we forget so easily that George Bush is the first man ever to bring a criminal record to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever those people are who voted for him just looked at that and said, oh, whatever, you know, so he drove drunk a few times. So
yeah, he's
what?
He's a born-again Christian, and so it excuses it.
I guess so. You know,
that's what it is, and that's why they've ordered, you know, and nothing, no criticism about, you know, his lack of attending drills in Texas, or the fact of the cocaine. Oh, he's born again. We forgive all, you know, all sins. And then on Mitt Romney, you know, he's what, over $278 million worth in, I don't know what the worth of John Edwards, but he was being crucified for the amount of money that he had in his campaign, you know, and, you know, advocating for the, you know, less of us and, you know, for poverty. And they don't attack Mitt Romney on his worth, you know. So it just makes me sick that we have a press in the United States that is so much, you know, hypocrisy. if a Democrat had done what Bush has done in these last 6 years, been crucified and he'd been impeached several times over, you know.
Yeah.
And
it seems obvious to me that if a Democrat had done one-tenth of the things that that George Bush has done, there would the Republicans would do what Republicans did. Do you remember the riot that they staged in the Miami-Dade County, what was it, the courthouse, where they were trying to count the votes in 2000?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that riot? Sure. And they would do it again and again and again if a Democrat was doing it. You know, they Republicans stood outside the vice presidential residence and screamed, "Get out!" To Al Gore before the term was even up.
Right. You know,
and that's one of the things, Carla, that scares me, is that our side, you know, on the one hand, we look at that kind of behavior and you say, you know, we say that they were really, you know, that was really trollish behavior. Well, here we are with real issues and real matters of life and death and right and wrong, and I guess we're afraid to be thought that we're behaving like them. What if we could get a few thousand people outside the vice president's residence now screaming, "Get out"?
Mm-hmm.
That might make it, you know, that might make a difference, but, you know, we can't be bothered.
No, if that group instead of being on the grounds around the Capitol, if they would march their little buns up to Vice President Cheney's house and do the same thing too, you know, to them. We got to do something. We got to stand, you know, up. It's just like when these group of, you know, teenagers. Oh, the other guy, you know, the guy that says, you know, come along and spit on him, you know, after they come back, you know, because he didn't believe in their cause. We hardworking Americans are staying home and you are off sponging. Well, I think teenagers that take upon and want peace in this world, because it's going to be up to the teenagers, not us people over, you know, 40. I mean, our job is to encourage these people to stand up for our democracy, because it is being taken away with habeas corpus gone out the tube, posse comitatus, like Jose Posada, an American citizen, you know, being taken into custody and being tortured for ever so long without even having a lawyer, and then, you know, being some brain dead.
Right, and in those instances, it's not just that person can't have access to a lawyer. Under those circumstances, the person can't even have access to his own family.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were being led by a government that had family values. Doesn't quite look so nice anymore, does it? No.
And then you've got, you know, the Democrats that are just kowtowing to, you know, the Bush administration's rule and don't even stand up for the American people, and it's just.
Well, you're calling from Utah, Carla. Let me ask you this before we go to the top of the hour news: are folks on the street out there talking about the mining disaster?
Yeah, they're talking a little bit about it. The families are coming out and saying, you know, we've got people saying it's terrible and, you know, pray for the mine. And, but the families are now coming out and, you know, because they were told, by Murray in, I guess, the press, or not to talk to the press. And I don't know how much you hear about what's going on out here, but, he's got over 300, in this mine, it was either 200 to 300 safety violations. And
right.
Some of the miners are saying, you know, the mine should have been closed down. It had been mined out already. And they question, you know, the language skills of the three Hispanic people. You know, how much language, you know, English did they understand?
I know. Well, at least a couple of them... were non-native English speakers. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and I think there was one that didn't come from Mexico. He came, I forgot what the name of the other country was. I don't know whether it was Guatemala or something, you know. And, you know, there's still the debate whether, you know, Murray said it was an earthquake in the University of Utah, and Southern said it wasn't an earthquake. It was from some of the stuff that they were doing in the mine.
It's from the collapse of the mountain from the retreat mining, and it set off the seismic. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a dangerous job. And one thing, a friend and I were talking about it, and, you know, you're from mining country, and what, you know, when they went into the mine and the mine collapsed, when the authorities had some idea where the general area was, even though that one fellow said he had enough expertise, he would have tried to run for, you know, where there would have been safe air. But, you know, it's almost like they don't know where they are.
They don't, because what's happened there is because of this retreat mining practice, the topography of the mine changes when the mine collapses. The practice itself, Carla, is designed to make the inside of the mine collapse. You're pulling the roof pillars, and there's nothing to hold the roof up anymore. And when that goes, you know, for them to say that they had some idea where the miners were, they were just lying. They were buying time, and that's what's so sickening out of this.
And now they're, you know, they're saying, well, we're going to, you know, close up this mine, and the miners are upset because he said, well, we'll find them, you know, either dead or alive. We're not going to give up. And so, you know, it's another, you know, hypocrisy guy, you know, has connection with, you know, that senator from Kentucky, you know.
Mitch McConnell.
And, yeah, and his wife, Elaine, you know, Chao. And, you know, and he's had overall violations in, what, he's got about 9 mines that he owns throughout the United States, so.
And this man has been an absolute madman, this Murray. He's been an absolute, I mean, just a madman. People in Ohio have known about him since the late 80s, early 90s. And his whole goal has been to attack working people, to attack workplace safety regulations. And in fact, when we come back from the top of the hour news, I've got some sound here coming from a CNN interview today. You'll hear more of the insanity. As it turns out, Mr. Murray thinks that the mine disaster was the fault of the United Mine Workers.
Oh, yeah.
And it's crazy. Carla, it's been a joy talking to you. And
you used to have a... during the Katrina thing and afterwards, you had a guy that used to call from what?
Sarge?
Alabama or
from Mississippi, Sarge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's he doing? I haven't heard him call for a long time.
Well, that's because he made a break into radio on his own. He's on Sunday mornings out on KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, wonderful for him.
And
we always, you know, when you hear the familiar callers come in, you don't hear from them, you want to know where they went.
And he's still out there, and he's still hollering about it and trying to raise awareness.
Well, good. Well, it was fun talking with you, and I love your program.
Well, thank you so much, Carla. It was a joy talking to you, and you have a great evening, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, we will go to the news. Chime right in. Hey, join the congregation. Come on down and put your hands upon your subwoofer and feel the healing waves of faith blowing through you. This is America's liberal voice. The voice of American reason. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean smashed into Mexico for a second time in as many days, this time hitting Veracruz with 100-mile-an-hour winds. Property damage from the once Category 5 storm has been extensive, but no deaths have been reported since its path through the Caribbean killed at least 13. Overland, Dean has lost some steam and has been downgraded. The governor has declared a state of emergency in Ohio after heavy rain caused serious flooding and forced hundreds to evacuate their homes. 22 deaths are being blamed on the weather there. Property damage has now reached $38 million. After President Bush expressed some frustration with the lack of progress made by Iraq's leaders in the political arena, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki struck back. Maliki said no one has the right to impose timetables on his government and that his country, quote, can find friends elsewhere. President Bush later spoke of his support for al-Maliki while making a speech to military veterans. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed today when their helicopter experienced mechanical problems and crashed. The UH-60 Black Hawk was on a night operation with another helicopter when it went down outside of Kirkuk. A newly declassified internal report by the CIA says the agency's top leaders missed key opportunities to thwart two hijackers before 9/11. The report also found the CIA failed to formulate a plan to combat al-Qaeda in the years before that attack. In Utah, the CEO of the Crandall Canyon Mine says if crews don't detect any signs of life today, the mine will be shut down and turned into a tomb for the six missing miners. Rescuers are boring a sixth and final hole into the ground where they believe their colleagues were trapped in a cave-in. In Washington, Justice Department attorneys say missing White House emails are private and not subject to public disclosure. Attorneys are fighting a lawsuit aimed at forcing the administration to reveal the whereabouts of some 5 million emails the White House says have been misplaced. Scientists have identified one of the factors that may have contributed to the collapse of the Minneapolis I-35W bridge. The buildup of pigeon droppings apparently acted as a catalyst and caused the support structure to rust more quickly. This week, the 13th and final body was recovered from the wreckage of that bridge. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up after this.
Hulhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week. Yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out. I'm putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The Food and Drug Administration's approved a popular adult schizophrenia drug for use in children. Risperdal, manufactured by Janssen LP, is now being prescribed to people as young as 13 to treat irritability arising from autism. Researchers say they've discovered antioxidants in dark roast coffee make the brew bitter, not caffeine as originally suspected. German chemists say their findings may change the way coffee beans are prepared. Lehman Brothers has closed its subprime mortgage unit, BNC Mortgage. BNC's closure will affect 1,200 employees and cost the company more than $50 million. So far, 24,000 mortgage company employees have lost their jobs. More than 20 of the country's top lenders remain in business. General Motors has cut production at 6 plants that manufacture pickup trucks and SUVs, and the Financial Times reports Apple has announced the carriers for the European version of its popular iPhone. T-Mobile, O2, and Orange are the chosen service providers. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.26 a barrel. Gold is at $668.70 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 145 points at 13,236. The Nasdaq finished up 32, and the S&P up 17. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine past the hour, hour number two of this Wednesday prayer meeting edition of Head On. And, you know, we use, we refer to prayer meeting somewhat jocularly, if you will. But in many ways, if you're a praying person, I hope your prayers are going out, your good wishes, your energies, whatever it is. I hope they're going out to those families in Utah. Because to one degree or another, the coal that was being brought out of that Crandall Canyon mine was coming out of that hole in the ground so that people can walk away from a room and leave the light bulb on, or run an extra computer, or run three or four televisions. Because in America, the land of the greed, one television's not enough anymore. We're not polluted enough by mainstream media to be by just one of the machines. We've got to have three and four in a home now. And yeah, I don't care what people do with their money. It's none of my business. I don't care what, you know, just like I don't care what they believe, as long as they're not trying to force me to do it. But I do have a right to object to it and to not approve of it. Got an email here from our good friend Teresa in Ontario. So, Bob Murray and Bush's appointee, Stickler, are going to bury their sins. Bury them along with six human beings. Six men with lives, loves, families, dreams. Six men who may be alive right now but are about to be entombed forever in the bowels of this mine and under the greed and lies of the filthy owners and murderous politicians who allowed this disaster to happen in the first place. According to an article in the Salt Lake Tribune, Murray, quote, sought and received approval from federal regulators to make a significant and, experts say, risky change to the mining strategy, unquote. Now, according to CNN, a panel of experts has declared the rescue site as too dangerous to dig. Teresa says, I imagine it is, now that Murray and company, with an able assist from the Bush administration, have been violating the rules and endangering these men's lives for years in their lust for the almighty dollar. They've probably turned that mountain into a teetering catacomb in their vile, disgusting quest to suck every penny's worth of coal out of it that they can, and let the workers be damned. I grieve for those miners. I grieve for their families, and I grieve for all that America has lost under the rule of these killers. Teresa. I couldn't say it any better, Teresa. I couldn't say it any better at all. You know, what's the point of having federal mine safety regulators if the mine safety regulators don't believe that mines need regulating? See, that's what you get in Richard Stickler. He was incompetent to begin with. Please remember that he didn't fail to be confirmed by some, you know, left-leaning, loony, liberal, moonbat Democratic Senate. No. It was a Republican Senate. A Republican majority Senate that refused to confirm this incompetent shill, this flack, this Washington insider, this lobbyist. It was a Republican-controlled Senate that would have no part of him and forced George's hand to make him engage a recess appointment. Not the Democrats. No. Richard Stickler is the man who got up in the middle of a Senate hearing about Sago and walked out on the United States Senate. And George Bush appointed him head of MSHA anyway. What good is it to have federal mine safety regulators if the regulators don't believe that mine safety is an issue. And then, you know, then there's Bob Murray. And like I said, a lot of folks that he's been exposed in West Virginia. God knows he's been exposed in Ohio. And he is a monster. What else can I say? He's a monster. So he shows up on CNN in an interview with Kira Phillips, who, if you watch her from time to time, tries to actually do something remotely resembling journalism. And so she puts a hard question to him, but you know, it's like basketball. You can stand out there and bomb away from the three-point arc all day long, but if you don't have somebody in there battling for the rebounds, you're going to lose. And she didn't rebound. You'll see what I mean.
Into a shaft in the Crandall Canyon mine. Searchers again plan to bang on the drill bit in hopes of getting a response from six miners who haven't been heard from since the mine caved in August 6th. Reports suggest the rescue effort will be called off if there are no signs of life today. Meantime, mine co-owner Bob Murray is still taking heat over that rescue mission and the overall safety of his operations. He joins us now from Huntington, Utah, to talk about it all. Obviously, Bob, a number of questions for you, a lot of back and forth on
Bob,
this rescue
he's our
mission
neighbor.
And also the mine itself. Let me start with the recent talk about closing down this mine. Is that your plan, to close it down?
Yes, ma'am. Kira, when I helped rescue the heroes Thursday night from within the mine, when I came out the following morning, I told Mr. Sticker, the Assistant Secretary of Labor, that that mountain is alive and that I have no plans to go back in there and that I would be submitting papers to MSHA in that regard. A rumor was started by the United Mine Workers. It's false statements. They've made false statements from the beginning, but I've watched them for 50 years. And they've preyed on the tragedies of miners and their families to put out false information to organize their union. They even had pickets out here at one of our operations during the time that I've been on this mountain trying to save these miners and trying to administer to their families. Ma'am, there was never any intent to go back in this mine.
All right, so... All right, so I have two questions.
That's because they mined it out.
The first one is, let me follow up on what you just said. I want to make something clear because the media is getting a lot of heat, and I can tell you right now, as a journalist here at CNN and our entire news operation, in no way, shape, or form have we forgotten what each one of those miners has done. Not only the rescue workers, but the miners that are trapped in that mine. We realize after years of covering this story what miners go through and what they sacrifice to come home and support their families. So please understand that from us. So we are not criticizing what they go through on a daily basis.
Huh?
Now I want to ask you about this.
I believe CNN has done an excellent job in this regard. I'm just asking for your understanding, ma'am, for the families of those who were killed and injured on August 16th,
Bob,
as well as those on August 6th.
And you know, Bob, it's understandable. It's never easy to lose a loved one or face something like this.
What?
I guess the saying goes that you just learn how to deal with it. You never get over it. But I've got to ask you about you. There have been times you haven't been able to come do a news conference. There's been talk about you might be struggling with a heart condition, that the pressure has become too much for you. I have to ask you, how are you doing and how are you holding up? There is a lot of pressure on you right now.
I've been at the mountain, Kira, within hours of August 6th. I'll stay there until this is over. This is not about me. This is about the families of six trap miners and the families of nine heroes. And I'll be fine. I'm doing fine.
Well, we're glad, Bob.
The next time we're going to hear from you, Bob, I'm guessing will be at the end of the day when you finish this final borehole. Is that correct?
Ma'am, I don't really know. I think I'll give you a report this afternoon on what we find after we drop the camera in the number 5 hole and in what we find in the hole, for both on audio basis and a visual basis. But I want to schedule that conference in conjunction with the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration, as we've done faithfully heretofore.
Bob Murray, chairman of Murray Energy, co-owner of the Crandall Canyon Mine. I appreciate your time and just your honesty during this interview and for clarifying
your
questions for us. I know that this is not going to stop at this point. Appreciate your time, Bob.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Kira, you can see there, even during that interview when you mentioned, I mean, he appears to be out of breath. Folks were concerned about his well-being. A lot of pressure
I'm
for
going
him,
to vomit.
Not only for him, but also for the guys who've been going in there and the families as well.
I think it's tough for the families. It's tough for the miners. It's tough for those that have gone there to try to find those six trapped miners. Bob Murray obviously has a lot of pressure on him as well. And I think the next step, not only talking about
the next
final
step should be the indictment
miners,
of Bob Murray.
I'm sure there's going to be a continued investigation into what went wrong, why it went wrong, what type of safety problems were there with this mine, and hopefully, I mean, you look at Kew Creek Mine, Sago Mine, now this mine disaster, something has to be done with regard to laws and funding just to make this job somewhat safer for these miners.
I'm almost dumbstruck. If you consider for a moment, this is the quote, okay? This is what he said. She was asking him about the circumstances, and he goes away. He doesn't answer the question that she put to him. Instead, he says, "A rumor was started by the United Mine Workers. It's false statements they've made, false statements from the beginning. But I've watched them for 50 years, and they've preyed on the tragedy of miners and their families to put out false information to organize their union." You know, it was uncalled for. And nobody, very few people thus far have called Bob Murray on it. At every turn during this disaster, he has taken an opportunity to get in a dig at the UMWA, because the fact of the matter is, this was a non-union mine. The fact of the matter is, union mines are more prosperous, and union mines are uniformly safer than hell holes like Crandall Canyon and Sago Number 1. Sure, accidents happen at union mines. Sure, deaths happen, injuries happen. Lives are forever changed in incidents at union mines, but not on nearly the scale that they are at these non-union hell holes. Why? I'm sorry. Now, I don't want anybody thinking this is coming from the wrong place. But why was Bob Murray employing a non-English-speaking miner in his Widowmaker hole? Why? It's a non-union mine. He doesn't pay union scale. He doesn't have to abide by a union contract. Why would you want to bring somebody into that hole who can't understand the English words "get out" or the English word "danger" or the English words "roof fall" or the English word "earthquake"? There's only one answer to that. There's only one answer, and that answer is money, or the desire to pay less of it. Agnes? What?
For one, why was he there instead of the families? This isn't about him. He owns the mine. And he's bringing back the old adage where a mule is worth more than a man.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, the only place this man's going to hurt is in his wallet, if that. Does everyone remember what happened with Sago? The big hoopla and how long they kept the families out? And now we have this man saying that the UMWA is trying to cause him problems by unionizing? Well, anybody
he wouldn't
that...
Have,
no,
he wouldn't have six dead men in that hole if that had been a union mine.
Anyone who knows anything about history, before the UMWA, they worked you as long as they want. They let you die. And if you weren't able to work, they kicked you out of the company housing. It was a company town for a reason. And this man is no better than a grave digger. He did retreat mining, and he sacrificed his men. So this bull crap about him going in there and feeling so bad for the families, where were the families? It's not about him. It's about them. And it was no skin off of his nose if those men died or not. He can replace them. He does it every day.
He is a wicked man. And Kira Phillips talks about, you know, the next step will have to be investigations. I agree. But one of those investigations should be an investigation that is purely criminal in nature. And it should lead toward an indictment of Bob Murray. The indictment should lead to a trial of Bob Murray. And if 12 persons tried and true so find, that trial should lead to a conviction, and the conviction should follow with imprisonment. Bob Murray needs to go to prison. Because it was Bob Murray's deference to the so-called bottom line that led to the death of these six miners. See, do you know what the lie he's accusing the UMWA of? The UMWA came out, what the UMWA did is the UMWA looked at the mining permits and they realized what was going on. And they came out and they said, well, Bob Murray's Crandall Canyon mine was engaged in retreat mining. And that is what Murray is claiming to be a lie. Federal mine safety inspectors took issue with his claim that it was a lie. Bob Murray had those miners in there, six of them, pulling pillars. Pulling pillars and dragging out the last vestiges of coal before shutting the mine down, because pulling pillars is pure profit. Without regard to the safety of the miners, without regard to their well-being, it is pure profit. And he got caught doing it, and he is squealing like the stuck pig that he is. And now they say they're going to shut down the mine and it'll be a memorial. Guess what? Bob Murray doesn't have a problem doing that because there's no more coal to get. He's got everything out of that hole that he wants, and he doesn't give a damn that the families of those miners have not gotten everything out of that hole that they want, their loved ones. Bob Murray's loved ones are out of the hole. Bob Murray's loved ones, baby, are in the bank. Let's go to the phones. Kevin is with us. Kevin, I'm sorry I made you wait.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm okay. Going back to the Mormon thing, one thing I have to say about them,
yeah,
they have a lot of heart. They're going into some of the worst ghettos you could think, looking for converts. For real.
Yeah, they will. They'll go anywhere. Now, in Mitt Romney's case, he went into the death-defying and dangerous wine country of France when he was looking for converts. When,
yeah, that's more dangerous than going into some of these urban areas.
Well, you know, for him, I mean, he might, yeah, because somebody might sit him down and make him drink some wine and, you know.
And drink some coffee and actually have a life.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the time when, the same time that George Bush was evading service in Vietnam, Mitt Romney was avoiding service in Vietnam by missionizing to the heathen French.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, you know, with the whole mine thing, the mine accident, the thing is, Americans are not going to change their way of life. And that's the thing. We've been too well-fed, Hummerized, and, you know, I'm even guilty of it to a certain degree, even though I'm trying to change my lifestyle in many ways. But it's just, they're not. You know, Mid-America is not going to change. You know, and I debated when I was out in Minnesota. I debated, and they're like, why should I alter my lifestyle? And I'm like, sooner or later, it's going to happen, whether you want to or not.
Right, and what's going to happen is the alteration of the lifestyle will not come as a function of desire, but as a function of necessity, and then it'll be sackcloth and ashes and Lord, Lord, and wailing in the streets.
Yeah. Like, where I'm from in New York, Brooklyn, they have these beautiful, huge brownstones, you know, beautiful houses.
Yeah.
And it was brought up by, what's his name, Tom Hartman.
Yeah.
They were originally one family houses. You know, and these are really the Mack Mansions of the previous century, of the turn of the century.
Yeah, the Victorian era McMansions.
Yeah. And because of the Great Depression, a lot of them were cut up and made into rentals. And now, you know, like my house, the house I grew up in, you know, we lived on the bottom two and another family lived on the top two, and that's how we were able to make extra income. And I think people, whether they know it or not, all these people who are living in these suburban McMansions, that's coming to face them, because the way this economy is going and everything, it's going to hit them and hit them hard. People are walking away from their mortgage.
Yeah, I saw a comment, I don't know if you ever watch him, that Jim Cramer on CNBC.
Yes.
He said 14 million Americans have taken out mortgages in the last 3 years, and they are shaky mortgages.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're talking about the bloodletting on Wall Street. Well, those bloodlettings are having downhill, you know, downhill effects, and it has a real effect on real Americans who are losing their homes.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet we're talking about the Wall Street traders.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's like people are living way beyond their means. And, you know, it's like, you know, I had a boss who basically used his house to invest in Wall Street. He took out a line of credit in the house. I know he's in big financial trouble now.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I thought... And I was always taught, Kevin, that after the great stock market crash of 1929, that all this margin buying and stuff had somehow been remedied.
Well, because of 20 some odd years of Reagan Bush deregulation, it has come back in full swing.
That's what I'm afraid. That's what I'm afraid of. I wouldn't be surprised to find that that's true.
Yeah.
You're
saying?
No, I was going to... what you were pointing out, that the day is coming when... we're not. This is not... This isn't the back end of anything. This isn't...
No, this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the tip of the iceberg. You know, it really is.
And there's bigger trouble coming. I've got a soundbite here. Maybe we'll run it later. You just reminded me of the Kramer guy from CNBC. I'm not talking about the Seinfeld character. This is a stock trader. Having an absolute fit on air about what's going on. And I don't know if it's for effect. I don't know if it was to drive ratings. But it certainly didn't seem that way. We are, you know, I mean, seriously, we got one television in this house. We got a bunch of computers, Kevin, because it takes a bunch of computers to run this network. But we turn them off when they're not in use. But we've got one television. I don't understand. What does a family need with any... Okay, two, I can see the argument. What does a family need with three? What does a family need with four? Not for me to say that they do or don't, but in real-world terms, what's the point?
Well, I tell you, I am very... At least my mother is very guilty of this. When my parents first came to this country, there were five of us in the house with one television. Now it's just her in the house with five televisions. And I don't even know why.
Are they just leftovers from the attempt to keep you five from away from each other's throats?
No, it's just like over the years. When I was growing up, they were like, yeah, I guess so, for peace in the house, because... My household between my brother, my sister, and myself was kind of like Lord of the Flies. You know, it really was, you know, and a lot of it was caused over the TV. So I guess part of it was that, you know, and, you know, it's amazing now that you know, a lot of it is centered around TV. And, you know, TV has created a lot of selfishness and isolation, even amongst peers.
I remember...
I mean, not amongst peers, even amongst siblings, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look, like I said, we got one TV in this house, and that's kind of a matter of me saying there will be one TV in this house and Agnes agreeing. The kids, if we had five TVs, the nature of sibling rivalry is such that they would fight over the one that the other was watching. And I don't think there's anything unique in our kids being that way. I remember being a young 20-something, walking into a house in Atlanta, Georgia, and for the first, I saw a television in the kitchen, and it blew me away. And it wasn't like it was my first day out walking with shoes on or anything, but it just seemed kind of superfluous. What the heck do you need with a TV in the kitchen?
I mean, now that's the standard.
I'd
say the two things, you know, I guess Hitler and Mussolini wish they had, that America has managed to accomplish, is the television. Imagine if they had the television in Nazi Germany or fascist Italy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And highways. Hitler
had the Autobahn, but Italy was working on it.
Yeah, and that was all purposely designed to isolate people, keep them from forming together. And, you know, it was so that everybody would have private transportation. Nobody will, you know, because really public transportation is the only form of community we have left in this country.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why England and France have such massive democracies is because of the, in England they have their pubs, France has their pubs too, or their own version of pubs, and that's where people meet most nights. They're not watching TV. Most nights they go to their pub, have a couple of rounds of ale, and then talk.
You know, and I like the idea of that kind of a community. I once knew a woman, a wonderful woman, who had come from Cambridge, and she talked about the fact that the pub that she that her family visited or had been visiting, you know, for 75 years, you know, there was a little room where the children went and played, while mommy and daddy had a pint. And, you know, contrary to the right-wing religion industry, I don't think that's sinful or harmful or evil.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, you know, right-wingers, I've come to the belief that there's a lot of self-hatred in conservatives. They're just this. Any group of people that don't like to be treated well or don't want to treat anybody well, you know, there's a lot of self-hatred in them. And, you know, I just leave them to their own devices. You know, like John Lennon said, you know, time wounds all heals, and that's really what it's all about with them. You know, if you look at Haggard and the rest of them, there's so much self-hatred, homoeroticism, everything you can think of in the conservative mindset. I just finished watching JFK, and it's a prime example of the right wing. You know.
How so?
The self-hatred and the homoeroticism, you know, the relationship Clay Shaw had.
Oh, sure.
You know, that whole military...
Oh, hypocrisy.
Yeah, the hypocrisy, too, but there is that whole military mindset. It doesn't get any more homoerotic than that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, okay, I understand what you mean. Sure.
Yeah, so... But anyway, that's all I had to say.
All right, well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you, my friend.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
We're about a little more than halfway done with this evening's program. We'll take a little break and come back. Now, you know, of course, that your phone calls are welcome, as anyone else's are. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's the toll-free way to get in. The other way is on your own dime, and that's 304-658-5453. Either way gets you through, as does email bob@headonradio.com. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Moving monuments to better days. That mountain stands over our darkened lungs. It's time to ponder what we've become. In his company town, it's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Polar bears live in the Arctic, on the ice.
But the ice is melting because of global warming.
Some polar bears have to swim so far they drown. Baby bears have died.
When I'm old, when I'm 45, all the bears could be gone.
Grown-ups should do something.
If you're a grown-up, go to polarbearsos.org now. You can make sure polar bears are protected under the Endangered Species Act.
Please help them.
Where don't you know? That's the sound of the men working on the chain.
18 minutes before the hour. And we'll step away. I don't know if emotionally or psychically we can step back from the Crandall Canyon thing, the disaster, the misery, the hurt, the anguish. But we will move on to other stories, lest we just sit here and wail. And it is it's prayer meeting night. So what do you say that we... move over to the Southern Baptist Church for a little bit. Let's talk about Brian Doug Goodrich Jr. of the Providence Baptist Church in North Carolina. On August the 17th, 5 days ago, Brian Doug Goodrich Jr. was sentenced to 13 years in prison for sexually abusing several teenage boys that he counseled as a youth leader there at the godly, upstanding, and righteous Providence Baptist Church. Before his sentencing, Goodrich turned around to the victim's family and he apologized. He said, "I apologize for the deceit, the lies, and the betrayal." Huh. How about that? He didn't apologize for the diddling! He was a student at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Wake Forest. He was a volunteer at Providence Baptist
a megachurch of some 2,700 members. Oh, boy. And he worked with the church's 300 or so middle schoolers. You wonder why Agnes and I won't let our children anywhere near the local Baptist church? This is not an isolated incident. This is not a boating accident. Now wait, because it gets better. Or worse, depending on how you... Worse, trust me, it gets worse. How long did these offenses go on? Well, they started in January 2005, and the diddling went on and on and on and on until June 2006. 18 months of rape. 18 months of kiddie rape by this Southern Baptist. How did it break out? Oh, it wasn't discovered in the church or anything. No. The minister, the pastor, the senior brother didn't uncover this evil. Raleigh, North Carolina police arrested Goodrich last year when an officer during a routine patrol of Laurel Hills Park on Edward Mills Road spotted Goodrich, 24 years old at the time, and a 13-year-old boy in a parked car. Goodrich had lured the teen to the park for a sexual encounter. What's more, the police say that they think Goodrich not only raped the teenage boys, but also solicited them to engage in what the arrest warrants describe as a group masturbation session. Just let that one settle in, because we're a long way from done. So that's Southern Baptist upstanding godly life in North Carolina. Okie doke. Let's see. Where next? How about Tennessee? Okay. How about Nashville? Well, more properly, Carthage, Tennessee. Smith County, Tennessee, is the home of Maurice Carter. Mr. Carter is 44 years old. He's facing, oh, Jesus, 61 charges related to child sexual abuse, child exploitation, but wait, and exposure to the HIV virus. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation ascertained that Maurice Carter is HIV positive, and they also ascertained that he is a leader at a Baptist church in Riddleton, Tennessee, an hour east of Nashville. Once again, the senior pastor at the church did not uncover this evil. The deacons did not uncover this evil. No group of upstanding godly Baptist parents exposed this evil. During a traffic stop earlier this year, police found Carter in the vehicle with a boy. During the investigation, Carter shared his health status. There are four counts of child rape with a victim younger than 13 years. There are 23 counts of criminal exposure to HIV and what the news report only refers to as several other child exploitation charges. Kristen Helms is a TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation spokeswoman. She says this case has kind of taken on a life of its own, and I don't think anything at this point would surprise investigators in this case. Investigators think there are still more victims in this matter. When the police searched Carter's home, they found computers and videotapes. They also found more of the same in a storage unit. The TBI says, in being as, well, undetail-oriented as they can possibly be, given that there were probably a trial, there are several unidentified minors in the videos. Ms. Helms said, "We know right now we have several victims. We still have unidentified people in pictures, and we're expecting more victims to come forward." This is sad and sick. Baptist church leader Maurice Carter. That's North Carolina. That's Tennessee. Oh, how about, I mean, let's not think this all just happens beneath the south of the Mason-Dixon line. How about the southwest suburb of Chicago? Libertyville, Illinois. This one gets really twisted. Our locus of godliness, holiness, and Bible believing in Libertyville, Illinois, is the First Baptist Church of Romeoville. The person in question is Jeff Hanna. Back in 1996, Jeff Hanna was sentenced to 9 years in prison for having sexual relations with four underage girls, ranging in age from 15 to 17. And at the time of those rapes, he was married. And, of course, wait for it, he was the youth minister at Crossroads Church in Libertyville. So he gets paroled in 2001, and the first thing he does is to go and jine up at the First Baptist Church of Romeoville, Illinois. Praise Jesus, hallelujah! Because his new wife was also a member there. Now here's where it gets even more interesting. The congregation at the First Baptist Church of Romeoville knew about Hannah's crimes. Yet when the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Romeoville took a new church, the congregation asked Hannah to be their interim pastor. He was the pastor of the church at Romeoville for 3 years. And even ever since then, he's been a fill-in preacher, teacher, and music minister. Del Kirkpatrick is one of the deacons who hired Hannah. He said, In our church, we believe in forgiveness. The Chicago Sun-Times talked to Hannah, who was 42, by the way, talked to him a week and a half or so ago, and Hannah couldn't even manifest any remorse for the rapes that he had perpetrated back in 1996. He said he had a troubled marriage, and that he'd had problem with, and the newspaper article puts quotes around urges. But wait, this is the part that'll make your skin crawl. In discussing the crimes, the sex crimes, the predatory sex crimes that this upstanding man of God committed, he said, and I quote, "I honestly believe that had I been a college pastor, I'd slept with college girls. But I was a youth pastor. It was less about age and more about who I spent all my time with." Thank God he wasn't in charge of the nursery, huh? Every now and then I do one of these stories, and Agnes will be sitting there typing away in the happy, happy chat room, and just sort of off in Agnes land, and I'll read something, and her neck will whip around so fast that I could almost hear the vertebrae popping. This was one of those. "I honestly believe that had I been a college pastor, I'd slept with college girls. But I was a youth pastor. It was less about age and more about who I spent all my time with." Yes, Agnes. Yes, dear. Yeah, I know. Speechless, aren't you? It's not just every day you get Agnes all speechless and stuff. Randy Bruno was the prosecutor, and that's R-A-N-D-I-E, so I think maybe she's a she, the prosecutor in Mr. Hannah's case, and she said, "He has the charisma to fool everybody." But he still, he led the Romeoville church until February 2006 when the Reverend Charles Hamby, a 54-year-old divorced pastor with financial troubles, was hired. When Hamby remarried a few months later, several church members left, including another member, Kirkpatrick. He said, "A pastor should be the husband of one wife." Dig that. Dig that. This guy was willing to stay in church with a convicted rapist of young women, but he left the church when the 54-year-old divorced minister remarried. So it turns out, apparently, that the Southern Baptist Convention's only, they don't just have a problem with gay marriage, they've got a problem with heterosexual marriage, unless it's a heterosexual marriage of which they approve. But their problem does not extend to divorced, remarried ministers who have a rap sheet as long as your arm for raping teenage girls. Is this sinking in? This is just astonishing. But it gets, as the saying goes, better. Oh, yeah. Or worse, depending on how you feel about it. Because there's a follow-up to the story, also from the Chicago Sun-Times, by the same religion writer who exposed the story in the first place. Now, we're talking about Jeff Hanna, right? It was Jeff Hanna who raped the young women. Well, while he was preacher there at the Southern Baptist congregation at Romeoville, he invited his neighbor. Oh, Agnes. He invited his neighbor, Brian Buckley, to lead special music. at a September 9th celebration service at First Baptist Church in Romeoville. Buckley told the Sun-Times, I was asked to see if I was available on that date. Buckley is 38 years old. He was convicted in 1997 of four counts of criminally assaulting a 14-year-old girl over several months while a youth pastor at Christ Community Church in St. Charles, Illinois. Hannah met him in prison. Really, I'm not kidding. They live on the same street in Romeoville. They work for the same outdoor lighting company. Hannah and the Reverend Charles Hamby have resigned from the church after the Chicago Sun-Times began asking questions. Hamby said Sunday, this past, that he saw nothing wrong with putting two child molesters into worship roles. We're a church that believes in grace and redemption, he said. You probably wish I would stop this. Yeah. I'm not gonna, because we're at the top of the hour, but we're not done. Even though we've covered Maurice Carter, who faces 61 charges related to child sexual abuse, even though we've discussed the conviction of Brian Doug Goodrich, 13 years in prison for diddling teenage boys. Even though we've talked about Brother Hannah there, who was kept on by a church, invited in by a church, even though he had a rap sheet for the raping teenage girls, even though he said that he wasn't remorseful about it, and it was only because he was around teenage girls instead of college girls, and he would have cheated on his wife with the college girls by bedding them if he hadn't been around the teenage girls. And I perished the thought of what would have happened. So, and we did that too. But then again, No, I'm going to wait till after the news. I'm going to make you wait for this one because you're not done screaming yet. It's prayer meeting night. Hallelujah. We got some more Bible-believing Christians to talk about. Right here on America's Liberal Voice on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean is now a tropical storm. It was downgraded after a two-day rampage over Mexico, hitting the central eastern coast at Veracruz today with 100-mile-an-hour winds before losing steam. No deaths were reported on the storm sweep of Mexico, but property damage by wind and flooding is extensive. The governor has declared a state of emergency in Ohio after heavy rains caused serious flooding and forced hundreds to evacuate their homes. Rescue crews are using boats to get people out of their flooded homes. Similar situations are reported in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Thunderstorms and rain remain in the forecast.
After President Bush expressed some frustration with the lack of progress made by Iraq's leaders in the political arena, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki struck back. Maliki said no one has the right to impose timetables on his government and that his country, quote, can find friends elsewhere. President Bush reaffirmed his support for al-Maliki during a speech to military veterans. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed today when their helicopter experienced mechanical problems and crashed. The Black Hawk was on a night operation with another helicopter when it went down outside of Kirkuk. A newly declassified internal report by the CIA says the agency's top leaders missed key opportunities to thwart two hijackers before 9/11. The report also found the CIA failed to formulate a plan to combat al-Qaeda in the years before the attack. In Utah, the CEO of the Crandall Canyon mine says if crews don't detect any signs of life today, the mine will be shut down and turned into a tomb for six missing miners. Rescuers are boring a sixth and final hole into the ground where they believe their colleagues were trapped in a cave-in. A panel issued the first report on the Virginia Tech shooting with recommendations to improve communication about troubled students. The internal report also called for more security measures, such as locking classroom doors. A student killed 30 people and himself in a shooting rampage 4 months ago. Scientists have found a couple of contributing factors that may have led to the collapse of the Minneapolis freeway bridge that killed 13 people. The buildup of pigeon droppings apparently had a corrosive effect on the structure. Experts are also looking at de-icing chemicals that may have also eaten away at the steel. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
Two major studies show that weight loss surgeries on the obese reduce their risk of early death. Patients who underwent gastric bypass or lap band procedures found long-term mortality dropped 40%. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a popular adult schizophrenia drug for use in children. Risperdal, manufactured by Janssen LP, is now being prescribed to people as young as 13. It's used to treat irritability arising from autism. Lehman Brothers has closed its subprime mortgage unit, BNC Mortgage. BNC's closure will affect 1,200 employees and cost the company more than $50 million. The U.S. Product Safety Commission issued a recall on more than 300,000 Chinese-made children's products today. 250,000 of the recalled goods are SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise that contain paint with excessive lead. General Motors has cut production at six plants that manufacture pickup trucks and SUVs, and Google says its YouTube internet site will now feature video advertising. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.26 a barrel. Gold is trading at $668.70 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 145 points at 13,236. The NASDAQ was up 32, S&P up 17. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, I hope you don't think that I bring you these stories with some sort of special glee or that I've got some sort of particular vendetta against the Southern Baptist Church. I don't. I think it's a shame what right-wing fundamentalism has done to that denomination.
Like I said in my conversation with Mark about a week ago, Mark Levine, where I grew up, the Southern Baptists were kind of the normal ones. We weren't as normal as the Methodists, nor by a long shot anywhere near as normal as the Presbyterians. And you know, well, the Whiskey Episcopals and the Lutherans, you know, they were just, you know, party people. But we weren't as bizarre as some other fundamentalist sects that kind of, you know, they were kind of a signpost for where the church was heading. I don't do this because I hate the Southern Baptist Church. I do this because I hate what the Southern Baptist Church has allowed itself to become. You know, in many ways, I do this for my beloved neighbor down there, 94 years old. I love her like a second mother. And it was she who was largely responsible for me going to that Southern Baptist church. She and my mother. On days when my father was off at the furnace and had the car, we were a one-car family. I would get a ride to church with our neighbor. And she is a mighty decent soul. And I don't know if, I doubt if anybody ever tells her what, I mean, she doesn't miss a Sunday. And I'm sure, and she is, you know, convinced that liberals are godless, even though the fact that, you know, she was alive when electricity came to the region thanks to liberal policies and the Tennessee Valley Authority. She was alive for that. And she remembers what it was like without it, but she forgets that that was liberal democratic policies. Because she has been inundated for years, decades, with a statement, a claim that liberals hate Jesus. After all, this was, in fact, the church that paid 20-some-odd thousand dollars to Oliver North to come and speak. Yeah, not kidding. Let's go to the phones. David joins us from Maine, and I'm sorry to have kept him holding for so long. Hey, David, welcome aboard.
No, it wasn't that long, actually. I just called in about 10 minutes. It's cool.
Okay, thanks.
I've been on hold longer before.
Sorry, man.
It's all right. Yeah, I was going to mention, you know, I keep bringing this up, but if anyone can do, you should watch the Henry Rollins show every week on Friday, because they had Samuel Jackson. And let me tell you why, to me, Henry Rollins is a different type of interviewer than the usual. He had Samuel Jackson on the chair, and instead of talking about movies, Samuel Jackson brought up his upbringing, and you know, when they go the route of the drug addiction and all of that, then they try to go back to promoting back to his movie, whichever movie it was, like Black Snake Moan or whatever it is, The Champ, the Resurrection of the Champ. That's the new one, I guess. But what Henry Rollins did was different. He stopped the interview when Samuel started talking about his activism, and then. He got, if people, people need to see this. He talked for 10 minutes, like maybe 12 minutes on Sam's activism past and the parallels of what he sees today and what he saw in the 60s. You won't see an interview like that on Entertainment Tonight.
No, not hardly.
And what Sam said was he really nailed it down why so many people are so apathetic to the situation that they're in, and Henry pushed him to give the answer, but he got the answer out of him, and so I think Henry Rollins, Bob, I'm telling you, you're gonna have to find a way to see it. You're gonna have to see all of the episodes. I recommend everyone to see every single episode.
I like Henry Rollins. You know, I watched I got a clip sent to me from YouTube. That I watched last night called How I Protest the War, and it was part of a lecture that I guess that he gave in Israel.
Right.
Talking about his visits to Walter Reed and the impact that they had on him. And you just sort of come back with your eyeballs peeled back and you go, wow. No, he's something special. He really is, David.
Henry is on it. Bob, if you ever get millions and millions of dollars, you know who you're going to have to put on head on. You know automatically
no, Henry.
It's going to be.
Yeah,
Henry's going to have to be a part of it. It's just that simple.
Well, you know, I had a piece of email that I was copied in on, and I can't remember who did it, but somebody sent an email to Henry at Henry's show, suggesting that I and several members of the Horn and Malloy, among others, be given exposure on Henry's show as being different from the mainstream approach.
You see,
and
that
refreshing.
That to me, that would be a little tricky, because I can see an IFC consultant coming into Henry and going, well, we got to have a celebrity, you know, because they're keeping up the ratings and the ratings games or whatever.
Yeah.
But the musical guest afterwards, who we had on, is another guy that needs to be brought attention. His name is Manu Chao.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, Bob. Wait till you hear this guy's music. He's like a worldly alternative rock gypsy. He rhymes all. He sings all of his activism in different languages, English, you know, whether it's Spanish, and just different dialects.
Yeah.
And what's amazing about him is how much history he puts into his music and the audience that he's built just from touring. But Manu Chao is a special talent, and if there's a chance that you can get him on Head On, man, I got to tell you, he'll blow your mind, Bob.
I wouldn't know how to begin to find him to get him, but it certainly sounds fascinating.
No, I mean, when you get connects with management and stuff like that, which eventually you will, because you're going to have to, you know, keep running with the different content and everything. And someone like Manu Chao, I mean, just put him on the back burner for now. I'm just suggesting it, you know.
Okay.
But that's not really why I called.
It never is.
Yes, yes. Technically it isn't. I called because tonight is prayer meeting.
Right.
So I wanted to give a sermon or a prophecy that I just read to all the brothers and sisters of Head On. I know the truth of everything now.
Oh, prophesy.
Yeah, okay, so.
Need a snake? We can get you a snake.
I stole it, though, so, well, I mean, I'm in good company with the biblical scholars, but anyways, I stole it. Once upon a time, 75 million years ago, to be more precise, there was an alien galactic ruler named Xenu. Xenu was in charge of all the planets in this part of the galaxy.
Now, if you're going to start reading to me from Dianetics, we're going to have a problem, David.
No, people need to hear this story, Bob.
Okay, Xenu.
This summarizes.
Honest to God, this better not. This better not be Battlefield Earth. Don't let me find out this is from Battlefield Earth.
It might be from that. I mean, what isn't from Battlefield Earth? Well, anyways, since you spoiled it, Bob. What's that?
I spoiled it.
Yeah, you spoiled it by giving the Dianetics hint away. But that's...
Well, you can't just walk into the room and start hollering about Xenu and expect me to sit quietly now, can you?
Yeah, but there's a point. This is the story. This story right here of the ruler of Xenu, which involves DC-8 planes coming from different galaxies, not making this up, also immortalized on South Park in a two-minute fashion.
Yeah.
Cartoon that they did, but this is the story where people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars when you get to OT level 3, and this is what they give you. They give you this story, and they say, how about we just, I mean, this is what people are waiting for. And this is, and also, and you'll never hear this on any other radio program or anything, because a lot of mainstream radio, they're afraid to even talk about this because they get the faxes and the lawyers. And it just goes crazy, and that's why a lot of times, that's why you didn't hear it on CNN, that's why you didn't hear it on MSNBC, because they would like to talk about it, but Scientology's lawyers are so thick and so dense, they're right on it immediately. When
So in other words, you're trying to doom the horn here.
No, I'm not trying.
I mean, you need to understand, David, there is a full-on conniption in the chat room right now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Let me share. Hold on here. Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Where'd it go? Doggone it. Yeah, there it is. You do not want to screw with Scientology. Trust me. They will sue the Horn into bankruptcy and beyond. They sue everyone who looks at them cockeyed. And he's reading from their OT3 level. David from Maine, stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
But is it sarcasm or is it truth? See, this is the problem where I don't know, because I can't tell sarcasm on the internet. I'm sorry. I can't see the emoticons.
No, I don't think they're being sarcastic. I mean, they really...
They're being truthful, huh?
Yeah, they really... Well, I mean, the Scientology guys really do sue at the drop of a hat. They're sewers.
Right. I understand that, but understand this. Just so the people understand this. They only go after they go. They like to go after the big fish. They hate small fish.
We're not big enough yet.
Yeah, you're not big enough yet. But when you start getting bigger, we're not even going to talk. We're going to love Scientology, Bob. We're going to love the Thetans. We're going to love Xenu. We're going to love all of that. We're going to make figurines, for Christ's sake.
At what point? I mean, from Xenu, is Klaatu part of this? I mean, you know, I come in peace. What? We talk about things like this, and I can't believe.
I don't care I don't care what anyone says about L. Ron Hubbard, Bob, but he was a genius entrepreneur. I don't care. The fact that he got this off the ground.
Well, sure he was, and so was Oral Roberts, and so was Billy Graham, and so was Jerry Falwell. They're all the same brand of snake oil salesmen.
But the difference between L. Ron Hubbard and all these guys, he was like, I can create my own religion, and here's how I do the story. I keep it secret to the top. I mean, it was brilliant. The top tier, this story with the DC-8s, and you have to cleanse your souls by watching films from projectors. They made souls. They taped souls to walls. People think I'm making this up.
Well, you know, given the choice, I mean, let's say I've got a choice between Scientology and being a Mooney and having to do the sexual purification ceremony for Reverend and Mrs. Moon. I'm Scientology, man. I am. I just am.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know Agnes would love to hang out with Tom Cruise and Isaac Hayes and John Travolta, and you know, frankly, it wouldn't piss me off to. Well, wait, who are there any hottie Scientology babes?
What? Tom Cruise? What?
Jenna Elfman?
Jenna Elfman? Is she a Scientologist?
Yeah.
I'm there.
Now you're making Agnes cross.
No, she's been cranky all night. I can't make it any worse. Knock wood. What am I saying?
Yeah, I see. Now you have to wash it over with a comment now, because it'll be in her subconscious now, and she'll get you with the ice pick, like Sharon.
And don't forget the bottle of lye, dude.
Oh yeah, too. And she'll boil a rabbit. Now we're just leaping from movie to movie.
No, you're gonna get me in trouble yet. I'm so live and let live where all this stuff is concerned. You know, be a Scientologist. Did you ever see, what was the Steve Martin movie?
Leap of Faith?
No, that was a great one, though, too. No, this was...
Bowfinger?
Yes, Bowfinger.
Yeah.
And the Scientology representation and Eddie Murphy sitting in there, keep it together, Kit, keep it together. That's what I'm going to do, keep it together, Kit, keep it together.
You know what?
I mean, that was a Scientology representation, right?
I'm surprised that Eddie Murphy isn't a Scientologist. Hearing the stories about, and you know, the choice of movies that he's making lately, and with Disney and all of the remakes, and you know, such a fall. I mean, I cannot believe he's doing Beverly Hills Cop 3. I can't believe someone greenlighted that. I mean, it's like 20 years later. Let's do. Like, someone in the studio is like, hey, let's do Beverly Hills Cop 3. Like, something's out of whack there. Like, if Brett Ratner said to the Rush Hour campaign people, I've just been on a bender for a while, 20 years later. Let's do Rush Hour 3, man. Let's get Jackie Chan. Sucker.
I know.
I mean, you know, but going back to one of the reasons why I mentioned this, Scientology and everything.
Yeah.
It goes back to my feeling of how to really obtain money for funding. I think we were on to something last night. Cloak organizations, BS stories, and always get people to donate of people that you despise and you hate and take their money and use it for good.
But see, then they would put me in prison for fraud.
No, they wouldn't put you in money. They wouldn't put you in prison for fraud. You would build an organization, you know, you would build an organization that would look something right-wing. You can make it as satirical and funny as you want with Eugene Finnerman and all of these people. And, you know, you put just a little of money into it, and you just keep saying, you know, instead of, we need a fence, we gotta have a fence.com. We should have a fence. Maybe we can have a fence.com.
Or... Yeah, okay, I understand.
I mean, I really think that this is, you know, I tend to believe, Bob, just like where I take a lot of my cues from popular movies and culture and stuff like that, also from the world of Seinfeld, where they said, where George says, I must do the opposite. You know, we joke about this, but, I mean, if I'd play it smart. See, I would never name an organization that I was thinking on a radio program that I would want to roll with for a wet right wing, because I have one in mind, Bob, and if I told it to you, I mean, you'd just burst out laughing, like the ideas that I would come up with.
Oh, you know, you do me in most evenings, David.
I mean, first of all, I would hire Jesus General, and you
Oh, know, do I love that dude. I love that dude.
You know, that guy would just be like, yeah, I'm on it. And, you know, I get John Fox on the team. I get you, Fitterman. You know, you just get
The Rude Pundit? You've read The Rude Pundit, haven't you?
Oh, The Rude Pundit. He's great, too.
He's awesome. I've thought about having him on the program a few times, but I thought, you know, Agnes would turn blue in the face, you know, with him just casually talking about the things that come into his head.
You know who I discovered, Bob, that's good? The Existentialist Cowboy.
Yeah, that's another dandy.
Have you seen his blog entry for this week?
No.
He analyzes what free Republicans are saying about this administration. He takes quotes from their the message board. And it's really interesting.
Well, there are genuinely concerned people in the chat room, David. quote, I don't think David is aware of how dangerous what he's talking about is. This is nothing to be joking around about.
Joking about what?
You know, the Scientologists and so forth.
Oh, well, you know, I've read... Here's the problem with this, people. There was a time when Scientology was dead. I mean, you know, it's like an intimidating gang. They had that impression. They had those stories out there. They put out story after story after story. But see, ever since the Internet came along, and I'm being dead honest, ever since the Internet came along, it's changed a lot of things. A lot of people are not getting shut down. There are tons of Scientology. Look what South Park did. And they aired it on TV. I don't know if they do it in reruns, though. That's another
what a
thing,
yeah, but. what a great moment in television. Mom, Tom Cruise is in the closet and he won't come out. That
but,
was
you know,
just
in 1988, in 1989 and 90, and in those years when CNN, of course they would never go that route. Of course, because the lawyers, like I said, were so thick. But now, to the listeners, it's not like that anymore. You can talk about it, but just don't be part of the Hollywood status quo, or they'll blacklist you. As long as you're not part of Hollywood, as long as you're not part of CNN, I don't think they can mention it on CNN. Matter of fact, but you know,
you're being asked to email an emergency contact, David.
Email an emergency contact.
Yeah.
Why?
For when the Scientologists fly you off to Xenu.
Or
put a rattlesnake in your mailbox, or you know, whatever they're up to lately.
Or a phone call in the middle of the night that says, "We're watching you.
We're watching." No. That's the 7 days.
No. What about this? What if they pick up the phone, and they just do the Friday the 13th thing?
Oh, you're playing with fire. I want to say for the record that I have no problem with people being Scientologists. Or Southern Baptists. Frankly, I've got a bunch of stories here about Southern Baptists raping little boys and little girls, and oddly enough, I don't have any about Scientologists doing that.
Well, I just wanted to lighten it up. I'm going to keep it moving for your callers, but in the immortal words of Jason from Friday the 13th...
Dear God.
A lot of people won't get that, but you'll get it when you see it.
I get it. David, we'll talk to you later.
Later.
All right, now, you know, if knock wood, let's see, where's my head? Yeah, there's my head. Yeah, knock wood. Let's make it clear, I'm not being mean to the Scientologists. You're free to be a Scientologist. If you can afford it, cool, jump in, you know, be as weird as you want to be. Be a Southern Baptist. Be a
human.
Be anything you want to be. Be an atheist, be an agnostic, be a Jainist. You know, my the international market down in Charleston is one of my favorite places to go. They've got Ginest ketchup. And I guess it doesn't have garlic in it because Giants can't eat garlic. Go figure. And I don't think they can eat tomatoes either. And so this is like ketchup made out of bananas or something. I'm not kidding. It's made out of bananas. It's ketchup made out of bananas. And I don't know why a Giant can't eat garlic. I don't know why a Giant can't eat a tomato. I personally think it's rather silly that a human being who isn't allergic to garlic or tomatoes can't eat a piece of garlic or tomatoes. I guess spaghetti sauce is out of the question, huh?
But, Bob, I can't eat garlic either.
Well, no, you just can't be around it, dear, and that's why you don't show up in mirrors either.
That's true, and that's why I sleep on the dirt from my home country.
You're absolutely right, and that's, you know, I had to explain to the officer that night, please, officer, don't piss her, don't shoot her, it'll only piss her off, and you don't have silver bullets in that gun anyway, so, you know, you're just wasting the effort.
I know, and it just bums the children out that they can't take me down, doesn't it? Oh, what can you say? But don't make fun of what gets somebody through the night.
No.
It's only the hypocrites.
George Carlin said it best. Religion is like a lift in your shoes. If you need a lift in your shoes, put a lift in your shoes, but don't run around trying to nail lifts onto the soles of the feet of the natives.
Are they trying to nail it onto the feet, or?
Well, then stop that.
Just asking.
Just asking, sure. As has been asked of me by our good friend Frozy in the chat room, isn't conversation radio fun? You know, yes, it is. Oh, what a blast it is. You know, if you believe, you know, this is prayer meeting. Put your hands on the subwoofer and feel the healing waves of faith blowing through your body, and whatever it suits you to believe, believe, as long as you're not hurting anyone else. And see, that's why I hammer on these Southern Baptists, because they are hurting someone else. In particular, let's see, we're done with him. Let's talk about Mac Chambers. Mac Chambers is 66 years old. He's from Pine Bluff. This comes from the Nashville News, so that Pine Bluff, is there a Pine Bluff, Tennessee? Some Tennessean's going to have to help me with this. I don't have my Google Earth out. Mac Chambers is 66 years old. He's been charged with a Class B misdemeanor for having Oh, Lordy. And you thought the other ones were bad? Inappropriate contact with a resident at the Dirks Health and Rehab. He is the former pastor, Chambers is, of Summit Missionary Baptist Church in Pine Bluff. He's put his house up for sale in the last couple of weeks. He was formerly the pastor as well of Olive Street Missionary Baptist Church in Pine Bluff. But that was before the big schism in Pine Bluff that led him to found Summit Missionary Baptist Church. Now, he's not pastoring anywhere since he was arrested. He was arrested by Jefferson County deputies, taken to the Jefferson County Jail. See, I know Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I don't know if there's a Pine Bluff, Tennessee. He was, get this, you get busted for inappropriate contact, Class B misdemeanor, and Jefferson County bail is $655. Let's see. Yeah, tomorrow, he appears in Howard County District Court in Nashville? No, it doesn't make any sense. Well, he'll have the option of explaining his alleged actions before a district judge. Oh, yeah, I know. I've just got another message in the... rehab? Ew! Okay, here's what happened at Dirks Health and Rehab. Mr. Chambers, who's 66 years old, has a relative there. The relative is unable to speak, incapacitated. nurses overheard Chambers making suggestive comments to the relative. When they went into the room, they found that the victim's diaper had been torn off and her pajama pants had been pulled down to her knees. She was red-faced and crying. Her condition prevents her from speaking. He's only been charged, Chambers, with a Class B misdemeanor because A, the rape kit was negative, and B, the victim is unable to describe the incident. Of course, the spokesman for Dirk's Health and Rehab said that Dirk's Health and Rehab is committed to excellent care of its residents and staff. We will protect our residents at all cost. But only after they've had their diaper ripped off and their pajama pants torn down and they're red in the face and crying and unable to speak to describe the crime that was committed against them. I knew you wouldn't be able to get through all these without a comment there, Agnes. What?
If they heard him making suggestive comments, then why weren't they in the room while he was making them?
Yeah, well, you know, that question does arise, doesn't it?
No, because it seems like that nurses don't look at their charges anymore as patients. They look at them as a room number.
Now stop with the nurses.
It sounds like it there. I'm not... No, don't tell me to stop with the nurses.
No, what you've got is a situation here, and then these nursing home situations, these rehab situations, whatever, are particularly sad and pathetic because the management, because a lot of people are in here, in there on Medicare, Medicaid funding, and so the company has to maximize profit at the expense of resident or patient care.
Well, try this.
So you minimize staff in order to maximize the CEO's Christmas bonus.
Well, try this on for size. The good nurses, the ones that are dedicated to their patients and work very, very hard, are usually the ones that are punished most for taking care of their charges. But if a nurse heard something, then she should have been in that room immediately. I'm sorry, that's your duty. You're bound to that. That patient is your charge. And if he was doing something to that woman, then he deserves to be put in jail and the key thrown away. I'm getting tired of the, there's something wrong with them. They're mentally ill. They're not mentally ill. They're twisted and they're sick. And there's only one place they belong.
It goes on and on and on. And then, of course, there's, and I'm having to do this one from memory, and I can't find the copy on it because I had to move over to my other computer while the normal host computer melts down. There is the story. Okay, give me a second. Let me see if just on some odd chance I might be able to find this on the meltdown computer because this is... it's the story of an elderly minister from Topeka, Kansas, maybe, who had gone to Orlando, Florida, home of the happiest place on earth, and had gone there for purposes of... attending some sort of freakish evangelical conference. While there, he requested. Let's see if I can think how. He had requested a wheelchair. They brought him a wheelchair and rolled him to the curb where he was to wait for someone to pick him up. He was wearing a suit. He was well-dressed, well-spoken. 70-some years old. Wichita Falls, Kansas, I think is where he was from. Well, while he's there, waiting at the curb, in the wheelchair, he has a stroke. And he sits there at the curb at Orlando International Airport for 3 days. Or 2 days, maybe. About midnight Monday to, yeah, sometime on Tuesday. Sits there. And since he didn't look like a bum, and he wasn't screaming or carrying on, he was ignored. Nearly to death. He's recovering in a hospital now. Now, we will avoid the, and he was some sort of fundy, so we'll avoid the question of why God would send a stroke to knock him down, but his family was worried, and they finally found him sitting there in plain sight. But this is the best part. The Orlando airport issued a statement that said, no, he didn't. Really. No, he didn't. He didn't sit there. No. And proceeded, this was the best part. Well, he could have spoken to someone from the Transportation Security Administration. He could have spoken to someone from Homeland Security. He could have, and that's what it says in the quotations. He could have. But of course he didn't, because he couldn't, because he was having a stroke. And somehow, a lot of times when you're having a stroke, call me crazy, but communication kind of goes out the window. Lots of things go out the window on a stroke. But one of the chief things that does tend to go out the window is speech. And so at the airport leading to the happiest place on earth, a septuagenarian fundamentalist minister was left to sit in his wheelchair. When he was found, according to the report from his daughter, he was not in good shape. He had urinated on himself, defecated on himself, drooled all over himself. He was, in a word, a wreck. Let me see if I've got this right. Homeland Security can't spot a septuagenarian dude having a stroke but we're supposed to believe that they can protect us. From the Muslim terrorists. You can't get a sippy cup past Transportation Security Administration, but they can't notice a guy sitting there having a stroke. Just astonishing. Just astonishing. It goes on and on and on. One of my favorites, albeit a little bit back in time, is the Bill Nye the Science Guy story. This comes from Waco, Texas. He had been invited to address, and you know, because he's a kids entertainer, and he makes science real for children. I know my kids have enjoyed seeing him because he's always doing cool stuff and explaining stuff in a way that kids will get it. Well, an organization in Waco, Texas, invited Bill Nye the Science Guy, and this is. This goes back a little bit, but it's still worth mentioning. organization in Waco, Texas, invited Bill Nye the Science Guy to come and address them. He was at the McLennan Community College's Distinguished Lecture Series, and he gave two lectures on things like global warming, Mars exploration, and energy consumption. Which I guess was all well and good, because, you know, he's a heathen and a scientist and probably going to hell anyway, so the good citizens of Waco took him with a grain of salt. However, they drew the line at Genesis 1:16. Genesis 1:16 says, God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. That's what Genesis 1:16 says. Well, Bill Nye the Science Guy didn't have the common good sense to leave that alone in a place like Texas, where they have recently passed a law that says that Texas children are able to get up and go a-witnessing in the middle of biology class. Don't you be telling me my Jesus is related to no Homo erectus. No, Bill Nye pointed out that it says God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night, and he also made the stars. Just throwing that last part in case there was any confusion among barbarians 5,000 years ago who were fascinated by the ability of a wheelbarrow to help them walk upright. So Bill Nye points out that the lesser light, namely the moon, wait for it, isn't a light at all. I know this is going to come to quite a surprise. That the moon is not a light, that the moon is merely a reflector, that the moon does not create or generate its own light. And at that point in time, oh glory, at that point in time, the adults who had come to hear the McLennan Community College's Distinguished Lecture Series began to get up and walk out. The story says stormed out in fury. As she was leaving, one woman turned, looked over her shoulder, and screamed at Bill Nye the Science Guy, "We believe in God!" And took her three children and stormed out before they could find out any more ungodly, unbiblical information, such as the fact that the moon does not emit its own light. Oops, I did it to Agnes again. I tell you what, I'm batting a million tonight. That's right, the fundamentalists of Waco, Texas, were offended to find out that the moon does not emit its own light. Thank God we have the religious expression in education law that has recently come... Quit huffing the marker, Agnes. That has recently... It will soon take effect in Texas, along with the law that requires Texas school children to say under God in the Texas State Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, and I am informed that there is a Wichita Falls, Texas, and a Wichita, Kansas, but not a Wichita Falls, Kansas. Okay, I stand corrected. I think the minister was from Wichita, Kansas. I know he was from Kansas. I'm sorting out Topeka versus Wichita versus, you know, Dodge City. I'm sure he was from Kansas. Although... No, leave it alone, Bob. Leave it alone. And finally, oh, okay, to the phones real quick. Our good friend Alan calling from Alabama. Hey, Alan, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing all right, I think.
Good. Hey, I've heard
you talk plenty of times. It sounds like you have a pretty good acting voice. I would like for you to read sometimes some of the writings of Mark Twain about where he talks about religion. I think it's very interesting.
We've done that. We've done that a couple of times, and maybe some evening I'll make a special point of maybe doing a reading of Letters from the Earth. How would that be?
That sounds pretty good. So that's something he wrote?
Oh, yeah. Oh, if you've never heard Letters from the Earth, I'll send you an email when we're going to do it, and it'll blow your mind.
Oh, great. I think I'll look that up on the Internet.
It's out there. The text is out there, and you will laugh, Alan, until you think that something is going to break or bust if you don't stop.
Man. I've heard some of his writings, and I really like it. I usually listen to things MP3 file when I'm going down the road, and I got some of his, and it's really good.
Well, we'll try to do that.
Yeah. Hey, you know how all my life I always heard that that the South during the Civil War was destroyed by Sherman.
Yeah.
And you know the old saying goes, "Truth ends where war begins."
Right.
I was in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania the other day, and I started reading about that town, and that town was half burned by the Confederates.
Yeah, we didn't treat Chambersburg very well. Of course, Gettysburg took a pretty good whipping, too. I mean, the townsfolk. Yeah, not so much. Although, history has it that as they were marching through Maryland, Lee's army was under orders to sing "Maryland, My Maryland," in hopes of gathering support for the Confederate cause. Either they didn't sing so well, or the Marylanders didn't want anything to do with it, because the effort apparently pretty much failed.
Mm-hmm. I would hate to live back then, because I don't think I would want to fight for slaves.
I don't think I'd have wanted any part of it. Now, there are a lot of people, reenactors and so forth, and I understand the fascination. But what a nasty, nasty existence that war was, you know, where even if you didn't get killed in disease or shot, disease in camp had every bit as good a chance of wiping you out anyway.
Uh-huh. The South seemed like a big oligarchy, but I guess the North was too. They're big corporations.
Well, not so much big corporations, but there were rising business interests, the railroads, among others. But it was, you know, it was an economic juggernaut that was headed for a head-on collision with the agrarian South, because the trade policies of the North were good for the North but no good for the South, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Because the South at that time didn't make much of anything. You know, there were some shipworks and gunworks at Selma, Alabama, but beyond that, not a whole bunch else.
Wasn't good for the common man.
No, not at all. And, of course, you know, most of the people who fought in the Confederate Army didn't own slaves, but were involved simply because they had been told, rightly or wrongly, that they had been invaded. And when you tell somebody they've been invaded, they're going to go and try to repel the invader.
Yeah, George Bush, his administration, seemed more like an oligarchy of the old South.
Well, you know, the entire Republican Party is... A carryover from the pre-Civil War South. Alan, it's awful good to hear from you. We will do that Mark Twain some evening, I promise you. I've got a couple more phone calls here on the line I want to hit before the show's over.
Okay, thanks.
Good to hear from you, buddy. Later now. Wayne. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, buddy.
What's going on, man?
Earlier you were talking about the Mormons and you know, having more than one wife, and it reminded me of when, do you remember our cab driver?
Our buddy the cab driver, yes.
Yeah.
I do not know why they would want to have more than one wife. I have one wife, and it is almost sometimes it is more than I can stand.
Well, I mean, that's why his justification was for why Muslims are crazy.
Yeah, it was. And that was the point at which his cell phone rang, and he said, "Do you see what I mean? I cannot even take a fare across Washington, D.C. without she has to call me."
And they want more than one?
Oh, God.
God, that was funny.
Somewhere I've got that man's name written down, and what a prince he was.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was very I almost didn't want to get out of the cab.
Oh, yeah, just drive us around some more.
Right. He was very entertaining. Yeah. On a more serious and sad note, we had our carpenter foreman killed on a job today.
Oh, Jesus, where?
In Charleston, yeah.
Oh.
A 20,000-pound form fell on him. And
oof.
I don't know exactly what happened, but I'm not real happy about it. I mean, to me, you know, there was something wasn't right. I don't know exactly what happened, but I will find out. But he was from Pennsylvania. You know, worked for this big company that's building a very large bridge down in Charleston. And
which bridge?
Sad day. Pardon me?
Which bridge?
I can't even tell you exactly. You know, crosses the river.
Yeah.
I didn't think the project was as far along as it is, but, I didn't think that they were at the point of setting forms and stuff like that.
Dangerous business.
Very dangerous business. And, well, working, you know, that's, working, you know, for a living, a lot of occupations are very dangerous. And, you know.
Yeah, they are.
Construction is a very dangerous business, and so is coal mining. And, you know, for anybody that wants to watch that, what's his name, Murray?
Yeah, Bob Murray.
Bob Murray, he's going to do a live interview with Dan Abrams.
Okay.
On MSNBC. That ought to, you know. I'm sure he's going to tell us about all the earthquakes and stuff that are...
Yeah, demons.
Yeah, still going on. But he's an evil man also.
Yeah, he is. I mean, and I don't throw that word around lightly.
No, I don't either, but this guy has a reputation for it, you know. I mean, you know, this mine was reopened. I mean, the owners before that determined that it was mined out. But he knew all those pillars were still there. And that's what they were doing, regardless of what he says. They were retreat mining.
Sure they were. And oddly enough, even today, despite what he said on CNN, Murray has been talking about, he said, you know, we would abandon any effort to mine there. But the reserves are in an entirely different place. So he still intends to keep mining.
Yes, he does. And there was the, on one of the shows was the former, I don't know, Grand Poobah of the Mine Safety Academy and stuff, and he is irate. I mean, you know, the coal mining deaths have declined.
Yeah, you're talking about Jack Spadaro.
Exactly, except for the last 7 years. There have been 7 major mining disasters. And, you know, that's because of the Bush and his whole administration and, you know, allowing people to do things that they know they're not acceptable. But,
yeah.
You know.
Not even to make a buck. Not even to
right.
make a buck.
They're going to make money and they're going to give us money for our campaign. So therefore, let them do whatever the hell they want.
And a little bit of human blood washes off coal. You know, you spray it with some diesel and you can ship it out on the next rail car and it'll burn just fine.
Right, and for every one of those, what is it, 9 guys now? And I mean, that's assuming that the other 6 are no longer with us.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, for every one of them, there's 10 guys standing out that'll take their job, and they don't give a damn.
Sure. And a bunch of them will go into that hole not being able to speak English. Now, this isn't about, I'm not being anti-undocumented worker. I'm not being anti-Mexican, anti-anything. I believe that when you go into a hole, if the majority of the workers down there are speaking a language, say they, you know, if you, I don't speak Spanish. If I went into a mine in Mexico, it would be stupid because I couldn't understand when they said, come on, or danger, or roof collapse, or any of that.
Yeah, but you have to remember those undocumented workers are easily... more easily intimidated and taken advantage of and
more easily replaced and
pay them a hell of a lot less.
And if they're undocumented, hey, you may not even ever have to pay workers' comp.
That's exactly right. So,
Jesus.
Anyway, I hate to end the show on a sad note like that, but
well, thanks for sharing it with us. It's worth remembering, Wayne. You know, these things don't happen away from us. They happen in our own communities.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. You have a good evening, my brother, and I will talk to you later.
All right. Very good. Very good. Take care.
Okay, man. Bye.
And let's see if we can do this, Agnes. Jim. Jim?
Hey. Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. Got to go quick. We're running out of time.
Just a quick comment about the North and South thing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, even being from the South, I could not have represented a cause that says that slavery was not only a necessary evil, but also a positive good. And those are the words of Stephen Decatur Miller, one of the nullifiers of 1832.
Yeah, a positive good. I'd forgotten about that. You're absolutely right.
And, you know, who can support a nation that believes in something like that?
Well, how can a nation like that expect to survive?
It didn't.
It didn't. Jim, thank you very kindly.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. God willing, the crick don't rise. Up next is Strictly Confidential. The little electrons in North Florida are holding hands, and they're dancing about. And with any luck at all, they will get a program to us live with your host, Peter Godbold. Thanks, Agnes, for all your help. Thanks, everybody, in the chat room, on the email, on the phone, or screaming at your computer speakers. Whatever. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean is now a tropical storm. It was downgraded after a two-day rampage over Mexico, hitting the central eastern coast of Veracruz today with 100-mile-an-hour winds before losing steam. The governor has declared a state of emergency in Ohio. Flooding has forced hundreds to evacuate their homes. Rescue crews are using boats to get people out. Similar situations are reported in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Thunderstorms remain in the forecast. In a speech to the VFW today, President Bush voiced his support for the president of Iraq, Nouri al-Maliki, saying that it's not up to the politicians in Washington to say whether he'll remain in his position. It's up to the Iraqi people, who now live in a democracy, not a dictatorship. Japan's defense minister warned his country's opposition party pulling the Japanese support operation out of Afghanistan would send the wrong message to terrorists. Japan's mission ends November 1st, if not renewed. 15 of Saddam Hussein's former aides began their trial for their alleged roles in squelching an uprising in 1991. Up to 100,000 Shiites were killed by Hussein's army. The uprising was started by soldiers that deserted the army after their defeat in the first Gulf War. Key evidence in the trial are the dozens of mass graves that have been exhumed by the U.S. military since then. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed today when their helicopter crashed during a mission in northern Iraq. Military authorities and witnesses say the helicopter experienced mechanical problems. In Utah, the CEO of the Crandall Canyon coal mine says if crews don't detect any signs of life today, the mine will be shut down and turned into a tomb for six missing miners. Rescuers are boring a sixth and final hole. Engineers say two contributing factors that may have led to the collapse of the Minneapolis Bridge are the buildup of pigeon droppings and the application of de-icing chemicals. The 13th and final body was recovered from the wreckage on Monday. Seattle officials are keeping a wary eye on two men passengers and crew have observed over the past few weeks, asking